Okay, Reacher said. What's the deal?
You're going to jail, Deerfield said. There's no deal.
Bullshit, there's no deal, Reacher said. There's always a deal. Silence again. It lasted minutes. Then Blake shrugged.
Well, you want to cooperate, we could compromise, he said. We could call Lamar a suicide, grieving about her father, tormented she couldn't save her sister.
And you could keep your big mouth shut, Deerfield said. You could tell nobody nothing except what we want them told.
Silence again. Why should I? Reacher said.
Because you're a smart guy, Deerfield said. Don't forget, there's absolutely nothing on Lamar, you know that. She was way too smart. Sure, you could dig around a couple of years if you had $1 million for lawyer bills. You could come up with a little meaningless circumstantial stuff. But what's a jury going to do with that? A big man hates a small woman? He's a bum, she's a federal agent? He breaks her neck and then he blames her for it? Some fantastic story about hypnosis? Forget about it.
So face it, okay? Blake said. You're ours now.
There was silence. Then Reacher shook his head. No, he said. I think I'll pass on that.
Then you go to jail.
Just one question first, Reacher said.
Which is?
Did I kill Lorraine Stanley? Blake shook his head.
No, you didn't.
How do you know?
You know how we know. We had you tailed all that week.
And you gave a copy of the surveillance report to my lawyer, right?
Right.
Okay, Reacher said.
Okay what, smart guy?
Okay nuts to you is what, Reacher said.
You want to expand on that?
Reacher shook his head. You figure it out. The room went quiet.
What?
Blake said. Reacher smiled at him. Think about strategy. Maybe you can lock me up for Lamar, but you can't ever claim I'm also the guy who killed the women, because my lawyer has got your own report proving I'm not. So what are you going to do then?
What does that matter to you?
Blake said.
You're locked up anyway.
Think about the future, Reacher said. You've told the world it's not me, and you're swearing blind it's not Lamar, so you gotta be seen to keep on looking, right? You can't ever stop, not without people wondering why. Think about the negative headlines. Elite FBI unit gets nowhere, 10th year of search. You just have to swallow them. And you'd have to keep the guards in place, you'd have to work around the clock, more and more manpower, more and more effort, more and more budget, year after year, searching for the guy. Are you going to do that? Silence in the room. No, you're not going to do that, Reacher said. And not doing that is the same thing as admitting you know the truth. Lamar is dead, the search has stopped, it wasn't me, therefore Lamar was the killer. So it's all or nothing now for you guys. It's make-up-your-mind time. If you don't admit it was Lamar, then you use up all your resources for the rest of history, pretending to look for a guy you know for sure doesn't exist. And if you do admit it was Lamar, then you can't lock me up for killing her, because in the circumstances it was absolutely justifiable. Silence again. So, nuts to you. Reacher said. There was silence. Reacher smiled. So now what? He asked. They were quiet for a long moment. Then they recovered.
We're the Bureau, Deerfield said. We can make your life very difficult.
Reacher shook his head. My life's already very difficult, he said. Nothing you guys can do to make it any harder. But you can stop with the threats anyway, because I'll keep your secret.
You will?
Reacher nodded. I'll have to, won't I? Because if I don't, it's all just come back on Rita Skimica. She's the only living witness. She'll get pestered to death, prosecutors, police, newspapers, television, all the sordid details, how she was raped, how she was naked in the tub with the paint. It'll hurt her, and I don't want that to happen. Silence again. So, your secret is safe with me, Reacher said. Blake stared at the tabletop. Then he nodded.
Okay, he said. I'll buy that.
That we'll be watching you, Deerfield said. Always. Never forget that.
Reacher smiled again. Well, don't let me catch you at it, he said. Because you should remember what happened to Petrosian. You guys never forget that. Okay? It finished like that, as a tie, as a wary stalemate. Nothing more was said. Reacher stood up and threaded his way around the table and out of the room. He found an elevator and made it down to street level. Nobody came after him. There were double doors, scarred oak and wired glass. He pushed them open and stepped out into the chill of some dark, deserted Portland street in the middle of the night. Stood on the edge of the sidewalk, looking at nothing in particular.
Hey, Reacher!
Harper called. She was behind him in the shadow of a pillar flanking the entrance. He turned and saw the gleam of her hair and a stripe of white where her shirt showed at the front of her jacket. Hey yourself, he said. You okay? She stepped across to him.
I will be, she said. I'm going to ask for a transfer. Maybe over here. I like it.
Will they let you? She nodded.
Sure they will. They're not going to rock any boats as long as the budget hearings are on. This is going to be the quietest thing that ever happened.
It never happened at all, he said. That's how we left it, upstairs.
So you're okay with them?
As okay as I ever was.
I'd have stood up for you, she said. Whatever it took.
He nodded. I know you would. There should be more like you.
Take this, she said.
She held out a slip of flimsy paper. It was a travel voucher issued by the desk back at Quantico.
It'll get you to New York, she said.
What about you? He asked.
I'll say I lost it. They'll wire me another one.
She stepped close and kissed his cheek, stepped away and started walking.
Good luck, she called.
To you too, he called back. He walked to the airport, 12 miles on the shoulders of roads built for automobiles. It took him 3 hours. He exchanged the FBI voucher for a plane ticket and waited another hour for the first flight out. Slept through 4 hours in the air and 3 hours of time zones and touched down at LaGuardia at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. He used the last of his cash on a bus to the subway and the subway into Manhattan. Got out at Canal Street and walked south to Wall Street. He was in the lobby of Jody's office building a few minutes after 2 o'clock, borne along by 60 floors of workers returning from lunch. Her firm's reception area was deserted, nobody at the counter. He stepped through an open door and wandered down a corridor lined with law books on oak shelves. Left and right of him were empty offices. There were papers on desks and jackets over the backs of chairs, but no people anywhere. He came to a set of double doors and heard the heavy buzz of conversation on the other side. The chink of glass on glass, laughter. He pulled the right-hand door, and the noise burst out at him, and he saw a conference room jammed full of people. They were in dark suits and snowy white shirts and suspenders and quiet ties and severe dark dresses and black nylon. There was a wall of blinding windows and a long table under a heavy white cloth loaded with ranks of sparkling glasses and 100 bottles of champagne. 2 bartenders were pouring the foamy golden wine as fast as they could. People were drinking it and toasting with it and looking at Jody. She was rippling through the crowd like a magnet. Wherever she walked, people stepped up and formed a crowd around her. There was a constantly changing sequence of small, excited circles with her at every center. She turned left and right, smiling, clinking glasses, and then moved on randomly like a pinball into new acclaim.
She saw him at the door at the same moment he saw himself reflected in the glass over a Renoir drawing on the wall. He was unshaven and dressed in a crumpled khaki shirt, dried stiff with random green stains. She was in a $1,000 dress fresh from the closet. 100 faces turned with hers, and the room fell silent. She hesitated for a beat, like she was making a decision. Then she fought forward through the crowd and flung her arms around his neck, champagne glass and all.
"The partnership party," he said. "You got it."
"I sure did," she said.
"Well, congratulations, babe," he said. "And I'm sorry I'm late."
She drew him into the crowd and people closed around them. He shook hands with 100 lawyers the way he used to with generals from foreign armies. "Don't mess with me, and I won't mess with you." The top boy was an old red and gray-faced man of about 65, the son of one of the names on the brass plaque in reception. His suit must have cost more than all the clothes Reacher had ever worn in his life, but the mood of the party meant there was no edge in the old guy's attitude. He looked like he would have been delighted to shake hands with Jody's elevator man.
"She's a big, big star," he said, "and I'm gratified she accepted our offer."
"Smartest lawyer I ever met," Reacher said over the noise.
"Will you go with her?"
"Go with her where?"
"To London," the old guy said. "Didn't she explain? First tour of duty for a new partner is running the European operation for a couple of years."
Then she was back at his side, smiling, drawing him away. The crowd was settling into small groups, and conversation was turning to work matters and quiet gossip. She led him to a space by the window. There was a yard-wide view of the harbor, framed by sheer buildings on either side.
"I called the FBI uptown," she said. "I was worried about you, and technically I'm still your lawyer. I spoke with Alan Deerfield's office."
"When?"
2 hours ago. They wouldn't tell me anything."
"Nothing to tell. They're straight with me, I'm straight with them." She nodded.
"So, you delivered, finally."
Then she paused.
"Will you be called as a witness?" she asked. "Is there going to be a trial?"
He shook his head.
"No trial." She nodded.
"Just a funeral, right?"
He shrugged.
"There are no relatives left. That was the point."
She paused again, like there was an important question coming up.
"How do you feel about it?" she asked. "One-word answer."
"Calm," he said.
"Would you do it again, same circumstances?"
He paused in turn.
"Same circumstances?" he said. "In a heartbeat."
"I have to go to work in London," she said. 2 years.
"I know," he said. "The old guy told me. When do you go?"
"End of the month."
"You don't want me to come with you?" he said.
"It'll be very busy. It's a small staff with a big workload."
"And it's a civilized city." She nodded.
"Yes, it is. Would you want to come?"
2 straight years? He said. "No. But maybe I could visit, time to time."
She smiled vaguely.
"That would be good."
He said nothing.
"This is awful," she said. 15 years I couldn't live without you, and now I find I can't live with you."
"I know," he said. "Totally my fault."
"Do you feel the same way?"
He looked at her.
"I guess I do," he lied.
"We've got until the end of the month," she said.
He nodded.
"More than most people get," he said.
"Can you take the afternoon off?"
"Sure I can. I'm a partner now. I can do what I want."
"So, let's go."
They left their empty glasses on the window ledge and threaded their way through the knots of people. Everybody watched them to the door, and then they turned back to their quiet speculations.
You have been listening to The Visitor by Lee Child. Read by Hayward Morse. Thank you for listening to this recording from Soundings. If you have enjoyed this production, please write to us at Isis House, King's Drive, Wickley Bay, Tyne and Wear, NE 26 2JT. And you will be sent a full list of our recordings.